I'm Scott Clapson, the community organizer here on KCIW. I am here today with Jody Holbert. How are you today, Jody?
Great for a Friday.
It's wonderful for a Friday, yes. So Jody, I asked you here today because we are both in the Ford Family Foundation's Wild River South leadership cohort.
Yes, we are.
I have learned a lot in this last year. What about you?
I have too. I've learned a lot more about personalities and introverts and extroverts and how we're supposed to kind of commingle together in a small community. So it's really great to get those little tools to be able to go out and make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a lot about extroverts and introverts and the way we all kind of, you know, we have different ways of processing stuff, right?
And oh, yes.
Sometimes we don't always understand someone else is coming from and how you can better understand that so you can work together, right?
Well, that's what's great about the Ford. They give you the tools and the books and whatnot and the opportunities to learn that.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time together. We spent like 48 hours, I think, total in all the classes.
Probably more than that.
Yeah, and then the extra meetings and all the things that we learned about and project planning and planning the social capital dinner that some of our listeners might have attended up in Gold Beach back in January.
Yep, yeah, January 9th.
Yeah, so yeah, it's been really exciting, the whole process leading up to it. And then picking our project, right? Every cohort picks a project to work on together. So do you want to tell them a little bit about, because the GOPAC project was your idea, right? You suggested it?
Yes, I did. But how we all came to it is everyone kind of brought their own ideas and we all together as a group slowly picked out doing pros and cons on what we did like and what we thought would be useful in our own communities. And we slowly kind of weeded that out until we got down to the last few. And then as a whole group, we decided the GOPAC project would just make the largest impact in the community.
Absolutely. And you said community. So this just isn't people from Brookings, right? This was people from multiple places.
Yes. Smith River, Brookings Harbor, and Gold Beach, and possibly Port Orford. We're still in works on that one, but
yeah.
Yes, it'll affect all of us.
Yeah, so that was part of the whole thing with picking a project. We all, you know, we had a large group of us. There was quite a few people in the cohort at the time that were learning together, and our big thing was we wanted to pick something that was inclusive, right? So it just didn't have an impact in one of the communities, but since we all are community leaders from these different communities, and I think that's the beauty of the Ford program, is they bring together different leaders from different sectors, right? Because we're not just all from nonprofits, right?
No.
And that was the really cool thing, is to teach us all. Because with nonprofit stuff, it's easy to learn how to work together because you're all working in the same sector. But when you start bringing in other sectors, different sectors have different ways of operating, right?
And they do. And it teaches you how to commingle together within the same community as well.
Yeah, how to work together.
Exactly.
How to get on the same page to make a project like this happen. It's very cool. So yeah, we started out with quite a few people. And as often happens with people who are volunteering, you know, life comes up. People travel.
Yes, they do. Especially during the summer.
Especially during the summer. We had people traveling though long before the summer. It's been interesting to watch kind of people come and go and just how much people care, even if they have gotten busy in their lives. We just got a notification about a big donation yesterday to our project.
Yes,
we
did. Thanks
to Polly Hawthorne.
The Smith River Rancheria.
Yeah, the Talawa Dene Nation is, I guess, the name that they're choosing to go by now. So yeah, it's pretty interesting to just see the, you know, Jody and I are going to be presenting to a few different groups in the next like month or so. And so yeah, the project is called the Project GOPAC.
Yes, Project GOPAC.
So you want to tell us like why you suggested this and why this GOPAC project is so important?
Well, I guess it just started with working with the people I do in my office. We had our boss had actually been through the 1994 earthquake in California, so he was directly impacted by this. And when we realized just by talking every day that our children don't have anything, we don't have any preparedness plans in place, and we're all susceptible for tsunami and or earthquake since we're in the zone, that this needs to be something that needs to happen because we want to make the kids informed as well as making them feel comfortable and not scared, because it shouldn't be something they should be scared of.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember that at the Social Capital dinner that we had up in Gold Beach, we invited the Girl Scout troop here from Brookings. And I know some people were hesitant when they saw the young ladies walking in, because I mean, these are like, you know, people from the elementary school.
Young.
And they were startled that, well, why'd you invite them? Well, we invited them because these are the people that are going to be engaging with the bags, right? They're the leaders in their
group. Well, and they shouldn't be scared about right. something happening. And even though not everyone talks about it, it mm-hmm. still is something that you should be aware of.
And be prepared for.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Even if it's just not at the school, you should right. be prepared at your own house.
Yeah.
For any emergency.
Absolutely. We recently did a podcast with Andy Stubbs from the yes. police department here in Brookings, and it was on the Curry County Medical Reserve Corps. And that was a big thing that he reiterated, was it's really about taking those steps, even if it's just one step at a time, what you can do. And this was one thing that we identified as a group of leaders in the Wild River South leadership cohort for the Ford Family Foundation, that we really felt like this was a way that we could sort of make a statement. And so I thank you for bringing this forward, because it certainly has. It's open to dialogue, right? For people to not be scared, because I think a lot of people are fearful when we start talking about the Cascadia subduction zone and all of this stuff, and they get panicked and they don't want to talk about it. And that was the big thing that the Girl Scouts reiterated to me afterwards, was how they're hearing about it. You know, they hear about this big earthquake that could be coming soon, but it's not really addressed in a way where they're able to feel more comfortable with it and feel a little bit more empowered, right, to deal with it.
Well, that's why
gives them a chance.
I think if the schools also become more involved, once the GoPacks are placed in there, they're going to have an open dialogue with the kids to where they're going to be more comfortable, and it's not going to be such a panic if something mm-hmm. were to happen during the school day. They'll know what to do. They'll know exactly how to act, and it's not going to be just madness mm-hmm. running through the streets.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if the ground shakes for 4 minutes, you know, that's a, and then that local, you know, that fault line goes, that's 15 minutes that you have once the ground starts to shake to get to higher ground. And we're really lucky here in Brookings, but in Gold Beach and Port Orford, the schools aren't so lucky. They're,
no.
you know, our schools here in Brookings, they're out of the tsunami inundation zone. So we're a little bit more fortunate, but their schools, yeah, it could be a little bit more chaotic. So the more we can help them prepare, the better.
Well, because our schools are actually the only ones who aren't in earthquake and tsunami,
yeah.
because Smith River, Gold Beach, and Port Orford are all in tsunami and earthquake zones, while ours is just earthquake.
Okay.
So we are lucky, but that means everyone else around us, they need to become a little bit more prepared than most.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So how do we know that this earthquake is coming?
Well, that's just what scientists have been kind of deciphering. They do a little research out. They just did one off outside Newport, I think I was reading about, and they said it's due in the next 10 or 20 years, but you never really can predict mm-hmm. what's going to happen. We just have to be prepared, and if it happens, it does, but if it doesn't, then let's hope it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that we as a cohort talked about, was in picking this project, right, the limitations that are placed on us, right? We have to keep it to scale, right?
Yeah.
That there's a certain scale and parameter that we have to stay in, because the Ford Family Foundation wants some consistency with these projects, right? As far as
yeah.
the scale goes. And so we were kind of puzzled about that. Like, what happens if we wanted to do more than the elementary schools? Like, what if we wanted to do all the schools? And what if we wanted to do Crescent City? And what if we wanted to, you know, expand? And that's part of the reason why we approached St. Timothy's, what was the Free Medical Clinic, which is now they're focusing at St. Timothy's Episcopal Church here in Brookings more on emergency preparedness medical stuff. And it's why we approach them as a fiscal sponsor, because of that, you know, idea of there would be a place where if someone wanted to continue this work, and if people from the cohort wanted to continue this work to get more bags into the community and maybe, you know, into other places, that we'd have the opportunity to do that, because we would start building community partners, which is a good thing, right? We're presenting to the ham radio people. Pelican Bay Amateur Radio Club.
And they're going to be the ones who are going to have to help us communicate when mm-hmm. something does happen, because we're not going to have cell phones or internet. Yeah. We're really going to be cut off from the outside world. Some, they were even saying maybe a few months, up to a few mm-hmm. years, depending on how the bridges are going to withstand mm-hmm. such an impact. So we could be here for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We could be here for a while. And Andy Stubbs was talking about that, too, about there's something like 17 different isolated locations here in Curry County where it's not just bridges, that just there will be landslides. The land will just start to slide. And so there's places where the road will just wash out and there won't be a way to get there.
No.
And it's not like there's going to be a way to get there from the other side either, because if you've been in Curry County very long, you know that we're all kind of on the side of the hill. So, yeah. It's pretty awesome that something like this could be happening in our lifetime.
It would be an experience if it happened in our lifetime, not one that I would wish upon anyone, though.
Yeah, I think it would be really, really traumatic. And I think that, again, it's really important. That's why we talk about it, right?
The children.
Yeah, the children. Well, and people get nervous, right? They get scared when you try to talk to them about this and they're not.
I think they're overwhelmed.
Prepared. Yeah, because they don't know what to do and they don't want to be fearful and they don't understand that we're not talking about this for fear's sake. And
no.
I think that's really important to reiterate.
It's not a scare tactic.
Yeah, we're not trying to scare anybody. Nobody that's talking about this earthquake preparedness and tsunami preparedness, nobody's trying to scare people. What we're trying to save lives.
And educate.
Right? Yeah, because the more prepared we can be with projects like this and things like this, the more people are going to be alive in the event of something like that happening, because we're not going to have the ability for people to get here from another place to help us out. We're going to be on our own, like you said, for a bit. And so the more things we can have and prepared for this, because there's going to be some, you know, stuff will happen. Buildings might, you know, collapse and things like that. And people are going to get really hurt, and having ways to help, you know, address those needs and those wounds and things like that.
Well, and that's what I think is great about Gold Beach is Riley Creek Elementary was just given a grant to retrofit the school for earthquake. So now if all the schools could do that, that would be something that would be a great help as well, even though it's really hard to come across those type of grants. It still would make you a little bit more prepared
mm-hmm.
because most of our schools were built maybe before the 60s, maybe even prior to that. So they're not really necessarily able to withstand earthquakes.
Yeah.
They didn't have the...
Well, they didn't know, right?
No.
A lot of people in this area didn't know that the fault line was off the coast, because a lot of these buildings in our area, they didn't know that this earthquake was going to happen when these communities were built. And
well, they also didn't have the building codes back then either, because they just kind of built how they'd like and hope for the best.
Yeah. Well, they didn't even know that a 9.0 was possible, right? They hadn't done any studies. As I talked to a geologist that moved here, she was in the Master Gardener program with me a couple years ago, and she was telling me that when she was in school, they didn't have 9.0 on the Richter scale. And so when she moved here and she started learning about the geology, and she's like, I sure did pick an interesting spot to live as a geologist.
Well, you really would. And I even remember growing up along the coast here, they never spoke about any type of natural disaster in schools. The only real thing we'd ever did was the earthquake drills, where you just get under your desk and wait for mm-hmm. it. And I think there just needs to be a little bit more communication than mm-hmm. that with them.
Yeah, I agree. There needs to be a lot more communication, because that's really how people are going to make it through such an event, is really to prepare themselves. Because, again, the ground shaking for 4 minutes, it's not going to be like earthquakes that most of us might be familiar with. The ground shakes for like a couple minutes and then it's done and it's kind of rolling. This is going to be pretty serious quake. And then that tsunami is going to come pretty fast. So once you feel that ground shake, it's time to move and get to higher ground and really kind of, you know, be concerned about your own safety and getting to higher ground as soon as possible. And if you have kids, getting your kids to higher ground with you. But there's going to be a lot of people kind of running for their lives that aren't prepared. And again, just trying to make people prepared and make them aware so there can be a little less fear when it happens and a little bit more, okay, we know what to do. We've been practicing for this, right? When you practice for something, you can be a lot more confident when it comes, just like I'm going to equate it to learning the piano, right?
Yeah.
If you go to a concert and you're playing the piano, if you practice, you're not going to be nervous. If you don't practice, you're going to be terrified when you get up at your recital to play the piece on the piano. So, yeah, that's kind of what I've been equating it with in my own head, is just the more I can educate myself. Because I'm not really scared of earthquakes, but this big 9.0 one, I think, is a pretty, you know, this is kind of on a different kind of level.
I just try not to focus so much on how it would be. I just try to think of how you can prepare and then just kind of take it step by step. Because overthinking it, I think, might overwhelm some too if they're just so focused on it's going to happen. And sometimes you have to kind of make fly-by decisions. If you maybe your first route wasn't necessarily able to be helped, you might have a couple different options as well, just a few other escape routes at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Not just focus so much on one. Have just multiple scenarios.
Right. So this GoPack, so it'll be in the elementary schools. Yeah, that's our intention.
Yes. Well, elementary schools, and hopefully by 2015-2016 school year is our goal.
Okay.
With it. So yes. In every other classroom,
okay,
they're going to alternate.
Okay.
Large and small packs. And large packs carry more heavy duty medical supplies, while the small packs just kind of give you a little bit extra of a boost for when they do kind of get to the same little meeting area. They can all kind of break down their packs and help everyone they can.
Okay. Cool. So there are two different sizes.
Yes.
Right. And obviously, these two different sizes, we have to raise money somehow, because I know you're not rich, Jody, and neither am I.
I wish I could. If I could, I would be there already in the schools.
Exactly. So the reason why we're doing this podcast for our listeners is, one, to educate people, right? I think education is really important. Some of these podcasts have decidedly taken a turn towards emergency preparedness on purpose, because the more I learn about it as a community organizer, the more I think it's important for people to hear about it on community radio. But also then too, for people that are inspired or know people that want to donate, maybe they have kids or grandkids, or maybe they work for the schools, or they worked in the schools at one point, or maybe they're retired here from, you know, working somewhere else in education and are really passionate about kids. So if you feel so called to donate, we'd love to have donations. But also, like I said, it's really about awareness, right? Because the more that we can talk about this and sort of demystify like what this means, I know that the Girl Scouts, like I said earlier on the podcast, they really appreciated being invited to the table, right?
And they weren't scared at all.
They weren't at all.
They were very receptive, yeah, for everything.
Yeah. And they were really excited, actually. How can we get involved? Like, can we help you in some way? Can we like help communicate it back to the school? And that's really my big part of why I wanted them to be there, because they're going to be in the school, right? They're the leaders in the school.
They're the ones who are going to have to put
exactly
these into play.
Yeah. Well, and I also didn't know either that the Girl Scouts also started as like a World War II sort of first responder type of thing. So this was back in their original like founding. This was part of their whole reason for existence. So when I found that out from the troop leader, I was super excited.
That's really neat, because I didn't
even know that. Yeah, I didn't know that either until I invited them and just was, you know, they came here to volunteer for a dinner at the Chetco Activity Center. And they were so thrilled to help with that. They said, if there's anything else in the future that you'd like to include us in, we'd like. And so I was like, actually, we have this really great social capital dinner coming up and we have some space available. So if you'd like to bring some of the troop. So it's really cool.
Well, we actually, at the Azalea Festival, when we had our booth for the project, we had a few of them stop by and help us at the booth for a few hours.
Oh, really?
One of the days. So,
oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah,
we had
a Boy Scout and a Girl Scout there together.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Eleanor's grandkids.
Yes, they were. And he was dressed up in all his beautiful Boy Scout. It was fun. And it got them involved in it. And they mm-hmm. could work with the public and they could see what it was going to be used for.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you also, I was there at the booth helping during the parade. But there was also on the fire truck from Smith River, there were people from the cohort, from the leadership cohort on the truck in the parade.
Yes.
You were in the parade, yeah?
Yes, we were all on top of the bright green fire truck for the Azalea Festival just to raise awareness. And I think we did some real good. We've had a lot of positive feedback from that. And the all, I think, 2.5 days that we were at the festival, we had a lot of positive.
I'm really happy that the word is getting out. And thank you to those of you that are in the parade, Jody, and some of the other people that helped make the parade happen, and everyone who was at the booth for that weekend from the cohort. Thank you so much, because this is really an important project. I'm Scott Clapson here on KCIW. I am here today with Jody Hulbert from the Wild River South Ford Family Foundation Leadership Cohort. We're here today talking about Project Go Pack. If you're enjoying this podcast and you'd like to donate to KCIW, we encourage you to do so. We also would encourage you to consider donating to Project Go Pack. You can find us on Facebook. There's a link there. We're also going to attach some information to this podcast. These Go Packs will be in elementary school classrooms and I believe Head Start classrooms, correct, Jody?
Yes.
Yeah. Smith River, Brookings, Gold Beach, and Port Orford.
Yes.
Although we have no one in our cohort from Port Orford, we figured that since we were doing the southern portion of Curry County, we'd
include them as
include
well.
Them because, again, we were very inclusive as a cohort and wanting everyone to participate. So, Jody, as we move into the second half of the podcast, tell me a little bit about what this experience has been like for you, right? Because you suggested this as an idea and as we talked about, right, we're working with volunteers and things get busy and there's lots of communication and we're not having any more trainings. We're kind of in project mode, right? And so it's kind of like, as we joked, the training wheels are off.
Yes,
and it's
they
just
are.
Go, and we're all from different sectors. So what's it been like for you as the person who suggested it, helping try and make this come to fruition?
It's been a really fun experience to kind of watch how it's unfolded and how the process is that we come along and choosing the packs and choosing the logos and making and just experiencing things and different ideas from everyone, because maybe what I had brought to the table at one point was good, but other people have great ideas that have really added to this as well. And it's kind of made it into something that I never really expected it to be.
Yeah. When you suggested it, were you nervous?
I was. I actually didn't even think that it would be chosen, because there were some really good projects put out there by some of the cohort members that I even liked just as much as my own. So it was a really difficult thing for me to choose, because they all need to be implemented in our community, but just in what order can we do it?
And thankfully, some of them are.
Yes, they are. They are becoming that way. And I'm kind of hoping that a few more of them will kind of start getting underway as well, that maybe starting in Gold Beach, but it'll be down here soon, and I mm-hmm. hope.
Yeah, the
fingers crossed.
Thanks to Beth Barker Hidalgo from Curry Community Health. She was at our Social Capital dinner, and she's very passionate about this project, but she is also very passionate about the community garden, right? That was
yes.
my suggestion for the cohort to work on, was the community garden in Azalea Park. It did not get picked. It was number two. But part of the caveat, or the piece that the cohort wanted to see for inclusion purposes, was to see that the community garden in Gold Beach got revived in Buffington Park. And I'm pleased to say that it is revived. Thank you, Beth and her team that meets on Sunday mornings. But they're gardening and they're working with youth, and it's so exciting. And they already had the structure, right? They already had the space in place. Brookings Community Garden in Azalea Park, we have approval for it. It's not moving along quite as fast, but we didn't have any of the structure in place.
And that takes a while.
Yeah, it does. Infrastructure takes time to build. It takes time to find grant money. It takes time to plan, right? And Gold Beach had this beautiful space in their park with raised beds, and it wasn't getting used, and it really just needed to be used again. And so special thank you to Beth, if you're listening. We really appreciate you coming up with creative ways to bring people together and revive a community garden, because that was one of our passions as a cohort. And it just didn't happen that project got picked. So because there were so many of us, right, and we learned different things about consensus building and things like that, how did you want to explain to them maybe how that worked and how we all came to the arrival at what project we thought was the most important for the group to work on?
I think we did it in two or three different sessions. It took two or three eight-hour sessions to come up with this. I remember a few weekends doing multiple hours of debating on it. But at first, we had everyone throw out their project. We had a sheet that we filled out. Then we kind of weeded it out from there. And I remember us sitting in a circle, giving pros and cons as to why each project should be chosen and why it would be a great thing to do. And then some people even had personal experience for some of the pros, which I think swayed people more so when they had something that touched at home instead of being something you've never experienced, you wouldn't know, but the people who have become really passionate about it. And we had papers being thrown around. We had so much
the snowball activities.
Just to find out, there were a lot of questions even with this project, and there still are questions with the project as to what, you know, is it a good thing or should we still change certain things? And that's kind of a work in progress, but I still think that this is just kind of a stepping stone into being able to be built into something so much more once it's just started. And that's where I'm kind of hoping it'll just kind of be a snowball effect. And I kind of like the idea of having community gardens be something that we could all utilize if something were to happen in our communities. So I liked the project that you had to work with both of it. And I was hoping it could somehow kind of align together.
Well, it's all happening, right? And there's a reason. You know, you can't just say to people, oh, well, let's do gardens in public spaces so when this big earthquake and tsunami comes, we have a way still to feed everyone, right? Or also the other thing that some of the people that I'm collaborating with are starting to realize is it's really great for mental health as well. And we have a lot of mental health needs in Curry County that traditionally haven't gotten their needs met or met in ways that weren't the healthiest for them or whatever. And that's another thing too that, you know, I can't come right out and say, hey, you know, it's more than just feeding people at the food bank or people that are hungry and teaching people how to garden. It's really about healing people, right? And whether that's in the event of a disaster or currently people that are struggling with, you know, just feeling disconnected from life and struggling with any sort of like mental health issues. So yeah, there are multiple, but the disaster preparedness is a big part because we're not going to have trucks to come into the grocery stores.
No, because we're all going to have to. And it's also a really good thing to get the kids involved in doing gardening because they should want to be self-sufficient at some point, know where their food comes from and understand it. And it's just, they should all know how to do that because I grew up gardening with my grandparents and I couldn't imagine not having that experience in my life.
I grew up gardening with my grandpa, too.
I love it. My grandma was a gardener. She had everything. She would not buy anything from a store.
My grandparents were almost the same. They did buy some stuff from a store, but yeah, they canned everything.
It was hard
for
them.
They had bees. They made honey.
Yes.
The
orchards, the trees. I mean, but that
apple
was a
trees,
really
yeah.
nice way that I grew up, and I had a lot of great memories. And if kids could get outside and do that with their parents or with maybe just others if their parents aren't able, that is still a good experience for them to have.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I one of the things, we'll probably have a podcast on this in the near future. We're working on developing the Junior Master Gardener program here in Curry County. And we're collaborating with All Care CCO and some of the libraries here in the county and things like that. So I'm really excited about bringing youth more into the picture because right now we do have some youth, Gold Beach at Riley Creek, as you mentioned.
Yes.
They're very involved. The garden's right next door and they have a very dedicated Master Gardener team that's working on that. Thank you to Mary Jacobs and the Master Gardeners up in Gold Beach that are making that happen. My dream is to see the gardens in Brookings get utilized on the level that they're getting utilized by youth in Gold Beach. I would love to see them get utilized here in Brookings.
That would be amazing. I love how they have the garden next to the school, but to make it a little bit more capable for everyone in the community to access. So I'm not sure if that's necessarily for their use only.
Yeah. Well, I think because it's on district property, I think it's really specifically for the schools. But it's something that we've been talking about because I was in the Master Gardener program and it's part of why we're talking about youth access to gardens. Because, yeah, it is really important for them to learn, but it also is important that in the event of something like this happens, or when this earthquake happens, that our youth know how to sustain themselves, and our youth know that, okay, there are other ways to feed myself than just going down to the grocery store, because there won't be a grocery store with food in it.
Well, a lot of kids, there are some kids that I've talked to that didn't realize that they could go outside and actually pick their own food. They mm-hmm. just always purchase it at a local store, and they don't realize you can go out and do this yourself.
Carrots and don't come in plastic.
I know, right? You would be surprised. They don't just come in the baby form just automatically. And they really have no idea. It's so rewarding when you can pick your own food, you can grow it, and you can watch it become something that it would really impact children in a great way mm-hmm. to see that. And you work for what you want. So
you're making me smile right now, Jody. Thank you so much. Because I really did. I saw some links between these two projects. And because, like you said, we spent so much time
on there's so much
being sure that people's voices got heard and
everyone.
Then the snowball activity, where after we picked it, we got a chance to everybody write your concerns on a piece of paper and throw it to the center of the room and then pick up someone's snowball and throw it again. So nobody knew whose questions they were, but
completely.
We still got to express our concerns. So we spent so much time working through the GoPack project. There wasn't really a lot of time to think about how something like the community garden would be linked to something like this. They're really kind of connected. Like, this is like the immediate, but then there's also an immediate
long-term
food need, right? There's an immediate food need that happens right after you've addressed someone's wounds and things like that. Okay, it's the following day and the grocery stores are empty or collapsed. How do I feed myself? Right.
And you have to know how to do that. And I mean, there are books you could get to read if you could go out and forage for your own food, but you'd have to really spend some time before anything were to happen to learn how to do that, not till the last minute.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not really something that you can learn in a video game.
No, nothing with a video game. You actually have to physically touch a book and read and just get down. Take it back.
Yeah. Well, and that'll be the nice thing about these GoPacks is it'll be something tangible that the students can see in their classroom that will be able to open up a dialogue, that will be able to have people in our community be able to sort of demystify this for some of the young people that they're obviously hearing about it, right? I'm sure they see the internet. I'm sure that they hear things on television. They hear this talked about. I have adult friends that don't want to talk with me about it because they're scared. And I would like the youth not to have to feel that way. You know, I would like the youth to not feel like, gosh, this is going to happen and we have to worry. Well, yeah, it's going to be catastrophic, but at the same time, we can prepare ourselves.
We can get through it, though. It's not mm-hmm. something as you band together with your entire community behind
right.
you. You will flourish and you will make it through, but you just have to be willing to put the effort in order to do that.
Yeah. So as we're coming to the end of the podcast, Jody, do you feel like there's anything that we've not touched on that's important that we talk about the GoPacks or the cohort?
Well, if people aren't able to necessarily donate or whatnot to the project, we do have brochures and whatnot available for them, for their kids to maybe have an introduction as to like a safety plan in order to how to, and where is everything going to be in your house? What should be in their little go pack? Kind of get them a little bit more involved. And we have a lot of those materials that are available for free to be given out. And if you would like anything, if you go on the Facebook and you know, let us know, we could easily get you that information to you. And that way it's just kind of breaking it down mm-hmm. inside the home and bringing in a little bit more. I don't think there's an age in which you shouldn't be speaking to them. There's not someone that's too young
right.
to learn about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's a big part of this too, right? It's not, we've talked to some of the members in the cohort that are involved in implementing this. We've talked about how it's not just about the bags.
No.
It really is about the education piece as well. That's a big part of this, was that we were hoping that this would be the first kind of step in educating people and helping them kind of understand, like, this is a process and we need to be prepared. And if you don't have a bag like this at home of some kind, that you should have like a bag waiting, you know, by your door, wherever you're going to emergency exit from your house with,
or even in your car.
Yeah. Your car. I know people that do that. They carry blankets and stuff with them in their car because they realize that they might get trapped somewhere and they might not be able to get home. Right.
Some people are at work. If you live out of town, you won't have access to your house. Maybe depending on what happens. So it's always good to have a few different options, places around. And they don't necessarily have to be the most expensive bag out there, because it might be a little bit of a sticker shock if you were to go on Red Cross and spend, you know, $130 or $150 on a go pack. But you could make your own pretty reasonably just by, you know, getting lists offline and just doing research and what you'd need.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we could even consider, I know there's like a 28-day like thing if you want to make your own go pack where you can get different things for yourself.
Yes.
And maybe we could find a link like that to share with this podcast.
I have those links.
You do?
Actually, and I have the printed documents as well from the Zelia Festival still left over. So I can bring everything and I'll give you those as well.
Perfect. That would be awesome. And then that way we could attach some information with the podcast, because if you feel inspired by listening to this podcast today and you would like to donate, we absolutely would appreciate your donations to make these go packs and these classrooms in Smith River, Brookings,
Gold Beach,
and Port Orford all a reality. Thank you, Jody. And there's a lot of communities that we address with this. But also, it is about the education piece and getting people prepared, and that kind of one step at a time, realizing that it can be really daunting if you try and take it all on at once. But if you take one step at a time and just educate yourself a little bit more each time, and especially keep in mind the youth, right? Because the youth are the people that they're going to need some direction. They're going to need some help, and they're going to need some adults that have educated themselves to help, you know, keep them calm as well, because they're going to be looking to us for what to do. And this is one way, again, that we felt like we as leaders in our communities could come together and give some sort of leadership with this and get the conversation started. Thank you so much, Jody, for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm really excited. We're hoping, sometime at the beginning of the school year, right? We're hoping maybe by the holidays.
Yes, we're hoping before the end of 2015, they'll be in there, because we think we're on the right track. We just have a little bit more to raise, and then we'll be getting our matching grant and hopefully have these in there and being processed.
So Jody just mentioned our matching grant. So part of how the cohort works is each leadership cohort with the Ford Family Foundation comes together. They pick a project, and then just like a lot of grants, there's a matching process, right? And so we've kept track of all of our in-kind donations, all of our monetary donations. And when we have completed our portion of it, the Ford Family Foundation adds in their second half of the money, or our second half of the money rather,
yes,
to help make this project a reality, right? So people that aren't familiar with grant funding, that's oftentimes how it works, is they look for you to have something that you're bringing to the table. And this just us raising some of the money in advance showed initiative, right?
Yeah.
And so it's really awesome. It's awesome that the Ford Family Foundation
would even do that.
Yeah, does these cohorts, right? They have invested a lot of money.
A lot of money in all of us.
Yeah.
It's surprising how much they've spent.
Something like $5,000 or something per person that goes through it.
It's amazing of what they've done, and the workshops and the travels and just showing you meeting different communities. And you can really see how each of them have gained a lot in response to this program. So I just hope to see it continue on.
Yeah. Special thank you to the Ford Family Foundation Leadership Institute. We are so grateful for all of the information that you've imparted to myself, to Jody, and to all of our cohort members in the Wild River South Community Cohort, and all of the cohorts that have happened across Oregon. There's been quite a few. We had an opportunity to meet some at a conference called Conference of Communities up in Eugene. And this was back last year, I think, right
November?
About the time we started, November, and we got to actually talk about our project and talk about like what we were doing and stuff like that. So it was really exciting that there's so many people around the state and Siskiyou County in particular in Northern California that get to do these leadership trainings, and just the money that's poured in, like I said, and the time, you know, because there's
a lot of time.
Yeah, we were together for like 6 hours on a Friday and 8 hours on a Saturday, four different times.
Was it only four?
Maybe it was five. It was a lot.
I'm trying to think. I thought maybe there were six, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
I might
there was
just be
quite
thinking
a few
of meetings.
And we've had quite a few meetings since then too, right? So
yes,
we've spent a lot of those of us that are involved, if you know of anybody, if you're listening that's in the Ford Leadership Cohort for Wild River South, be sure to thank them for all the time they've donated to the community just to learn how to be a better leader, right? Because we're all from different sectors. We're not all from nonprofits. And just how do you collaborate, you know, when you have maybe different ways of communicating? I know, Jody, you are an introvert and I'm a super extrovert.
Completely.
Completely opposite.
Yes.
But right, we've learned how to communicate. And
that's what makes it easier to do that, because a lot of people didn't have a better understanding if you didn't understand how it works and why you guys tick the way you do.
Yeah.
And why we are the way we are. And it makes a little bit more sense now.
Mm-hmm. It was funny that day that they took all the extroverts out into the parking lot at SWOC and had us all out there, and we were being loud and crazy and
we're
funny.
We're the quiet ones.
And the quiet ones were inside, the introverts. And there were more of you, right?
Yes.
And when we came into the room, we came in because we were told to come back in, but you all weren't done.
No.
And we got shushed. And that was really funny because we were told to come in. And so we were coming in just being ourselves. And it was just interesting to see the difference between the two groups, right? That there was this group of super like extroverted people and this group of super introverted people. And how we could learn how the different people communicate, right?
I think that was one of my favorite days that we had, because it really opened my eyes and it made me realize that you just happen to work exactly a 180-degree turn from how we do.
Yeah.
And we're more internal and you're more external with everything. And I like that. And I mean, it opened my eyes and I can't even begin to explain how awesome that is.
Yeah, it's really
makes
exciting.
Makes me feel not so alone.
Right, absolutely. Well, and for someone like me, it helps me understand that when someone isn't talking, that it's not that they're not paying attention.
No, you're just thinking.
Yeah, or like if someone says, we encountered this a lot in the cohort, that someone would say things like, oh, well, I need time to process this, and then let me, you know, come back. And those of us that were extroverts, we were just like, no, let's go. Like, we were ready because...
I remember Jennifer.
Out loud. Oh, yes. Jennifer Hammergren.
I love her so much. But she was the one at my table most of the time. And that made me realize like how she worked. It was, we are all very internal and she's very external. And that's she just clicked along and snapped her way through. And then she would always laugh at herself. So I'll give her that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, and on to Jennifer's credit, she's a big part of the reason why St. Timothy's Emergency Medical Services
is our
fiscal sponsor, because she presented to the board.
Yes.
And we're so grateful to that, because we needed someone to help us house our money so we could have an account to continue to raise money.
Well, and especially someone that could reach into California as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they had the ability to do that, because we want to affect Smith River and hopefully sooner or later go into Crescent City.
Yes, absolutely.
Completed, but...
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jody, for being here with me today.
No, thank you.
I'm Scott Clapson, the community organizer here on KCIW. We'd like to thank a few special people before we close out this podcast. I'd like to give a special thank you to the Ford Family Foundation and the Leadership Institute. We're so grateful for all the money that you've invested in our county and in counties here in Southern Oregon and Northern California. We really appreciate it. We'd also like to thank St. Timothy's.
Yes.
And the Bishop's Advisory Council. Thank you so much for seeing the value of this project and wanting to participate and wanting to be so, being so eager, right? Not wanting to be.
Well, believing in us.
Believing in us, yes. They believe in us a lot, and that's wonderful. And also to all the people in the community that have come behind this project and donated. There's been quite a few people from the community, from past cohorts or that own local businesses or in local groups that are donating to this project. So if you'd like to donate to this project, we're going to attach some information to this podcast. It's called Project GOPAC, and we are the Wild River South Ford Family Foundation Leadership Cohort. We're hoping to get these bags for emergency preparedness into the schools, hopefully by the end of 2015. We look forward to your support. If you enjoy this programming, please donate to KCIW as well. Help us make our dream of having a radio antenna and being on the radio waves a reality. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you and have a great day. Bye.
you for listening to Curry Coast Community Radio, your community-supported radio station. If you like this program and want to hear more like it, consider supporting Curry Coast Community Radio by volunteering your time or contributing to our capital campaign to help us get on the air. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org.